Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And now that the growing season is coming to an end, it's the perfect time to reflect on how things went in your garden this year and to plan for next year. Post-harvest, farmers also like to spend some time reflecting and learning from each other. The annual Iowa Organic Festival or Conference is one of those opportunities for farmers and gardeners. It's coming up on Sunday, November 28th and Monday, November 29th at the University of Iowa Memorial Union. And one of the organizers of that conference is here with us today, Kathleen Dellett, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. And Cindy Haynes, associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State, will also be with us in just a few minutes. Kathleen and Cindy will answer all of your questions about the things you'd like to grow or grow better. If you are strictly an organic gardener, today is a great day to get your questions answered, since Kathleen is an organic specialist. But we've got you covered. No matter what your plant questions are, you can call 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kathleen, the theme for this year's conference is Save the Planet Through Organics, Managing Climate Change with Organic Practices. Tell me a little bit more about the conference this year.
Sure, be happy to. We are really pleased to have as our keynote speaker the chief scientist of the Organic Center, headquartered in Washington, D.C., Dr. Jessica Shade. She's going to be talking about all the research they've compiled on how organic systems can resist climate change. And I can go into that a little bit further, but in general, showing that using organic practices, such as what you already mentioned, cover crops, crop rotations, conservation tillage, and composting, and even manure, supports the carbon and therefore down potential greenhouse gas or global warming potentials in the atmosphere.
Cindy Haynes is also here with me today, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist and Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning, Charity. How are you?
I am very good. And we are having sort of an extension to the growing season this mm-hmm. year with all of these warm temperatures. I suppose that's not going to last very long. It's easy to get complacent this time of year.
It is easy to get complacent. It's, you know, a frost will come, but yeah, enjoy it while we have it. I mean, because it's pretty nice out there right now.
Absolutely.
Plenty of time to get those fall chores done. Yeah.
Well, no, I think you have to wait and plant your bulbs on Thanksgiving. Isn't that?
That's your policy. My policy is to try and get them in October so that I can do other things like protecting all of my trees and shrubs from rabbit and deer over Thanksgiving holidays.
That's a much, much better plan. Well, stay with us, Cindy. And of course, I mentioned it before, Cindy and Kathleen will answer all of your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Kathleen, I've tweeted out some information about the organic conference. Is this the kind of thing that only farmers can go to? Or this is not like that, right? It's something that's more general. So people with an interest should really check it out, right?
Absolutely, Charity. We welcome anyone interested in learning more about organic practices. Gardeners, farmers, consumers, we have something for everyone, I say. So take a look at the website and you'll see a whole, I call it potpourri of sessions, starting from how to grow things organically to how to help others obtain more food access, for example. And finally, something new this year, we're going to be looking at managing mental challenges in farming. With Jason Hoagland, a consultant that will be talking about that, along with Scott Kepke, who does a program called Horticulture Heals Hurt. You know, in these particularly challenging times with COVID and other stressors, we think it's important to have that social aspect for the conference
Absolutely.
This year.
And Scott Kepke, I know, has been working with prison inmates and gardening for many years as well. So he should have some really interesting insight into that. I want to dig into, because I know that you are also an expert in this, I want to dig into some of the themes that do play into organic farming, organic gardening being beneficial to all of us on the planet. And let's talk a little bit about organic no-till practices, because that's something that you can put into practice in your garden, even if it's a relatively small plot. Tell me a little bit about how that works and why it's so beneficial.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, I don't know if this was heard, but yeah, there's been a lot of research, and our keynote speaker, Jessica Shade, will be presenting that, showing that organic practices overall can increase soil organic carbon by 18% and increase microbial biomass carbon, which includes all the beneficial microbes that help recycle your nutrients, by 30%. So then on top of that, if you use conservation tillage, which organic no-till falls under, you can increase your carbon storage further by 14%. And so we've been experimenting with this organic no-till for several years now, and it's really a great process. You plant the cover crop in the fall. This is how we do it, but there's various ways, of course. And then in the spring, you come along with this machine called a roller crimper, and you crush that cover crop. So you're not turning it under. You're just leaving it as a mulch, because it'll die at a certain stage. And then it remains as a mulch throughout the season. And the idea, when it works really well, is you don't have to do any more weed management. You have a thick enough mulch out there from that cover crop that you've crushed to keep the weeds down for the season. And when it works, i.e. when you have perfect weather conditions to produce enough biomass of that cover crop, and then are able to crush it at the right time and get the crop in on time, you can have yields comparable to what we've seen in organic tilled systems, but with higher carbon, microbial biomass carbon, microbial biomass nitrogen. And, of course, when you're going to have that cover crop on the soil, it's going to lead to lower erosion. And our research at Iowa State has shown lower nitrogen leaching through these instruments called lysimeters, where we can capture the nitrate leaching.
That can be a little challenging to scale down to a garden. I know I've talked with people who have a hard time finding the seeds that they need for a cover crop in small enough amounts, for example, for their garden plot. Do you have advice for home gardeners trying to implement that?
Right. And I forgot to mention, too, that even just keeping mulch on your garden as long as you can, ours actually stays on year-round, will definitely help increase carbon sequestration and help against global climate change. So just a simple practice like mulching can definitely help in gardens. And cover crop seeds, I think you can get them at your local farm and garden, maybe Cindy knows, but there is a site, Albert Lea, in Albert Lea, Minnesota, Albert Lea Seed House, that has a tremendous supply of cover crops that I know they sell also to gardeners. So I highly recommend them. And we'll check with Cindy if she knows any local sources.
Well, sure. And let's talk a little bit about longer rotations. Now, this is a really important thing, of course, for farmers of all varieties. And we know about the corn and soybean rotation that many conventional farmers and organic farmers that do row crops use. But you're talking about something longer and more varied than that. Tell me more.
Correct. Yeah, in our research at Iowa State, just by adding one or two extra crops like oats and alfalfa can really increase your soil fertility and your yield. For example, last year in our research at the Nail Canyon Farm in Greenfield, Iowa, we had the organic rotation that had corn, soybean, oats, and alfalfa for another year. So it was a four-year rotation, beat all the other rotations, and the corn yielded like 159 bushels an acre compared to the conventional rotation, which was just corn and soybean, only yielded 135 bushels per acre. So we've seen this consistently, that by adding additional crops, especially those like oats and alfalfa that can add organic matter to the soil, that can improve the soil fertility because the alfalfa will add nitrogen, that will increase your yields and soil quality. And the same principle holds in gardens, too. gardeners are in a much better situation than farmers in that they know to rotate between families, just mostly to avoid disease within that same crop family, like potatoes and tomatoes. But by adding some nitrogen fixing crop in your garden, like hairy vetch, alfalfa, chicklin vetch is another one I've seen, red clover, white clover, all those will improve your garden for the long run to have that nitrogen fixing source out there.
Would you recommend doing that in addition to a cover crop, or does a cover crop kind of cover that?
Right, a cover crop would do that. And what's interesting about the cover crops, quote unquote, in Iowa, unlike where I used to farm in California, cover crops were grown just as cover crops to add more nutrition to the soil. But here, they're basically dual crops. So you can, as farmers mostly do here, is take the grains or the oats, but the oats are also adding a lot of organic matter to the soil. And hay, the alfalfa, of course, you don't want to take all the hay, all the alfalfa off, but you can hay some of it and then leave some for the winter. Do your last cutting in September and leave the rest through the winter. And gardeners, I recommend the same thing, putting your cover crop in the fall and letting it stay out there through the winter. Some gardeners do a summer cover crop too, a grass crop like sorghum Sudan grass, for example, if they can take part of the garden out and put that into a soil building cover crop like that. And in that case, you would just be tilling it under or roller crimping it, although farmers could also feed that crop to their livestock.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break, Kathleen. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Kathleen Dellett, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Also getting a little preview of the upcoming 2021 Iowa Organic Conference. You can find out more. Just search for those words, 2021 Iowa Organic Conference, and you can find out all the information you need. It's coming up November 28th and 29th in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Kathleen Dellett, Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist. And Cindy Haynes is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They are here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And it is a great day to ask any organic gardening questions that you might have. The growing season might be pretty much over, but look back on the year that has come before and think about things that you want to do next year and some questions you might have. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we're going to go to our first caller today. Danielle is on the line in Woodward. Hello, Danielle.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I know Kathleen from Iowa State and a board that we both sit on. My question is about alley cropping. It's been done for decades in Africa in the very dry Sahel. And this has been one heck of a dry year in Iowa, the only place I have good pastures where I had composted manure. And I'm wondering, would that be a transition for Iowa? We grow the best walnuts. I love to eat raw hazelnuts, so do a lot of other people. What about integrating some agroforestry practices with organic techniques?
Kathleen?
Sure. Hi, Danielle. Great to hear from you. Yeah, I'd love if that practice was embraced more here. I actually did my PhD dissertation at Berkeley on that subject, agroforestry, and demonstrated great benefits to the soil and increasing the productivity of the land overall. However, as with everything, there's always these caveats. And so, you know, most farmers would say, where am I going to get the equipment to do all this, these alternative enterprises, i.e., you know, how would I harvest crops? Because I actually had crops in between the, I'm sure this is what you're talking about, crops in between the tree rows. And so now you need specialized equipment to do the planting and the harvesting in between those trees. And then how much marketing is available for those types of products. It's all infrastructure. And I agree with you, it should be supported more. You will be hearing from some folks at the conference talking about these practices. Kathy Dice and Tom Wall from Redfern Farm will be there talking about their farm where they have some agroforestry going on and definitely multiple species of trees grown out there in a beautiful system. So, it's something that just needs more support, both research and infrastructurally, policy-wise, and I think it could take off. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Danielle. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Kathleen, there are so many different techniques for organic farming, organic gardening from around the world that sometimes I find it to be a little overwhelming. How do you kind of cut through the information overload that you can find if you start searching these things online and doing that kind of research?
I agree, Charity, and, you know, it's both a joy and a frustration because it's great. There's so much more now on the Internet about organic and scientifically proven organic results, which I could spend my lifetime reading, catching up on. We host this conference to bring in experts from around the country, and then we also attend conferences. Like, I'll be going to the Agronomy Society meetings in a few weeks in Salt Lake City, and we're having three symposia on organic production there, and there'll be people from around the world bringing in their ideas. In the past, pre-COVID, we were traveling to conferences internationally, and I did learn a lot about organic no-till, for example, during my sabbatical in Italy, and brought a lot of the techniques back from Italy for that practice, for example. But it's both overwhelming and great enjoyment.
Right. Exciting at the same time. You can call with your questions at 866-780-9100. We've got a couple of lines open for you right now. 866-780-9100. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Cindy, I've got a question for you from Sarah. She says, I have hedgerows of privet that the bees love in the spring and they smell amazing. Catbirds and cardinals nest in them every spring. The hedges are getting very tall and too gangly, about 10 to 12 feet tall. The lower branches are getting woody. Is it okay to trim them now, or do I have to wait till spring? I don't want to lose those spring flowers, and I want the bushes to fill out to be thicker for the birds' nests.
Right, right. This is probably one of the worst times to do any kind of pruning on something like privet that will initiate new growth after kind of that pruning wound. So I would say if you can wait at least until winter, sometime in December, in March is probably more ideal to do that pruning. And do the pruning, do something we call renewal pruning, where you're taking out a third of the stems during the dormant season, just a third of the largest ones 1 year, and then you do another third the next year and another third the next year during the dormant season. That will promote them to be a little bushier. That'll kind of rejuvenate them to grow from the base so they'll be nice and thick, and that'll help control the height. And you're only removing a third, so the two-thirds that remain will still bloom well, and so you'll get those lovely blooms and still have that kind of habitat for the birds. And you can also see if there's birds' nests in them during the dormant season so that you don't take that stem that maybe has a nest or something in it.
Well, and Aaron and I have been talking about this in past weeks, how the weather's been beautiful. And this time of year, we all get itchy to get out and doing something. And for whatever reason, a lot of us are really eager to prune, even though we really shouldn't be. So, I mean, we should be focusing on other things right now,
well,
right?
This is true. Pruning, we want to do pruning because this is something we have to do every year. And it's so much nicer thinking about and doing it now. But like I said, it's the worst time to do it because sometimes that certain plants will initiate new growth that has no time to acclimate for winter. So control that impulse right now and then use that being outside to rake the leaves or to cover the strawberries soon or put up fencing for rabbit and deer or plant those bulbs. There's plenty of other things to do to keep us busy. In the garden at this time of year and just hold off on the pruning for a couple of months.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. Jessica is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I am really new to gardening everything. I used to hate it. But I'm actually wanting to get into it, doing the natural route and organics and having like all the native plants. Well, not all of us, but get started on that and also have a tea herb garden thing. But I don't know where to start or how to start, and some direction would be nice.
All right. So you're just looking for some easy to access resources, Jessica, is what I'm hearing. Even maybe a book might be useful.
Yes, a book and some good solid general information to kind of get me on the right track.
All right, and I suspect both Kathleen and Cindy probably have opinions on this. Kathleen, I'll let you go first.
Okay, great to hear, Jessica. We love hearing about people that are interested in going organic or natural, which is pretty much the same thing when you talk about that for gardening. If you just Google organic gardening, you're going to get a lot of hits on the web. We have materials I could send you. If you're near your extension office, you could always give a shout out to extension here. Stop in your extension office and ask them for brochures or material, printed material they have. I have one on organic farming and there's also some on native plants and pollinating plants. Cindy can probably talk about that more. But I think Iowa State has a ton of resources. Mm-hmm. So the other option is go to the Extension Store. So if you Google Iowa State University Extension Store and you type in your topic, like organic or gardening or pollinators, it'll tell you all the materials that are available. And probably right now 90% are available for downloading free online. But the extension offices also have a lot of printed material that you could pick up, too.
But, all right. So you could stop by the Blackhawk County Extension Office. And I also want to put a plug in for the Tallgrass Prairie Center, which is in Cedar Falls. So that's a resource that you have really close to you, Jessica. Cindy, what do you want to add?
Well, there's other things like the Horton Home Pest News webpage. That's hortonnews.extension.iastate.edu that has a lot of information. And you can also purchase the Master Gardener Resource Guide. So that's very Iowa-centric and talks about different aspects of gardening and kind of gives a good foundation for gardening in general. And you can purchase that through the Extension Store as well. So I think, checking out that Extension Office, checking out the Extension Store online, and maybe Horticulture and Home Pest News, that might get you started and give you plenty of information to review this winter to prepare for next year's garden.
Yeah, Jessica, that probably all sounds a little overwhelming. Hopefully you have some patience to wade through things and some nice winter months to do some planning.
Yes, definitely. And I'll definitely start. I think I'll start with that master planning book, but I appreciate all of that. That is a huge help. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Jessica. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Rick is on the line next in West Des Moines. Hi, Rick.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question for you. A couple weeks ago, I dug up tall fescue clumps in my yard. I've got an acreage in West Des Moines, and Before I left on the trip, I put down some new topsoil, new seed, starter fertilizer, and kept my irrigation going every day, and the seed is coming on fine. My question is, I've got some unirrigated spot in my yard that I dug up tall fescue. Wanted to do the same thing with some new topsoil, seed, and starter fertilizer, but with no irrigation there, maybe just watering it with a hose if I can get it that far. But is it too late in the season to do that, or should I wait till spring?
It is getting a little bit late, but, you know, this fall's been a little warmer and a little nicer than normal. And right. I might suggest that you try it if there's just a couple of small patches. This is a cool season yep. grass, and the soil is still fairly warm. And at least, you know, you can try it, and if not, put some mulch over those kind of bare areas for the winter.
Okay, great. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you were pretty successful, so. Good job.
Yeah, and also had some grub problems in the yard and had it treated, but doing a little research, I don't know that they use the right insecticide on that, and isn't it kind of late in the season to do that anyway?
I think it's a little late for grub treatment. Usually we want to do that right before we know that we're going to have some injury, and we've had injury in the past. So that's also a great question. I think Adam Tomes is coming up next week. Is that right, Charity?
I think so.
Yeah, so maybe that one I'm going to have you, Rick, hold off until next week, and you call back and you can ask Adam.
Okay. Will those areas come back next spring, or do I have to reseed those as well?
It depends on the amount of damage that they actually did to the root system. But usually, you know, they'll try and come back, and they may be a little bit more open than you would like, but grass typically fills in pretty quickly. So I think it won't be totally okay. dead. Yeah.
All right. Thanks much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Rick. 866-780-9100. Mary is on the line in Fairfield with a question we've gotten every single week for the last 2 months. And Mary, you are not alone in wondering about what is going on with lilacs this year. But go ahead and ask your question.
Well, I've seen it all around, so, and I haven't been listening to your show, which I normally do. What do you recommend? And I know this isn't the time to prune, so should I wait and ask this question in the spring?
All right. So have you seen, there are two things going on with lilacs. So why don't you tell us what's happening to yours?
Well, it just started wilting earlier. The leaves just started wilting, and it just looks terrible. And then I just noticed I was over at a friend's, and it looked just like ours. They just look terrible.
Right.
All right, Cindy.
Yeah, there are some foliar diseases that have really become more noticeable in the last couple of years with lilacs. And the wilting makes me think that it's either drought-related or it might be more than just a foliar disease. Maybe it's a root rot, a kind of an issue or diseases of the root system. There's not a whole lot you can do about it. We're going to chalk some of this up to the fact that it was a pretty miserable dry year, and hope that your lilac was well established and that it should come back well next year. You might want to water if it has been really dry in your area and you know that that soil is dry. I might water this fall to make sure that it's got some reserve, some water reserves going into winter. But a lot of plants and lilacs have been on the number one list of everything lately with different foliar diseases or different diseases and reblooming right now. It's amazing. So, but they're tough plants. So don't worry too much and don't do any pruning on them. Just leave them alone and let them go dormant for the winter, and we'll wait and see what's going on in the spring.
So whatever's happening with your lilacs, you just have right. to leave them is the message
that's the hard part. Yeah, just do nothing. So, yes,
all right.
Just leave it.
Mary, thanks a lot for your call. Here's another one of those questions about whether or not it's too late. From Stephanie in Cedar Rapids, is it too late in the year to put down some grass seed or possibly clover? I know I'm supposed to do that in August or September, but since the year's been so unusual, I wonder if I might still have a chance to try rebuilding the patches of lawn my dogs have destroyed.
Yeah, usually we say by October, it's time to kind of stop doing that. stop sowing seed, but it has been an unusual fall. And I would rather have some seedling kind of trying coming up if we have another couple of weeks of nicer weather. I don't know when we're going to get a hard frost. But so if you have the seed and you don't want to wait until spring, you can certainly put this down in the worst areas. Just know that you may not get really good establishment and you may have to redo this in the spring anyway. So it may be a waste of money because it's all based on Mother Nature.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. You can join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Kathleen Dellett, Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Kathleen Dellett. She is Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Again, that number, 866-780-9100. 80-9100 is the number to call. And let's get to the phones. Barbara is on the line in in Des Moines. Hi, Barbara.
Morning. I have a question about a rose bush that I planted probably in late July or early August. Unfortunately, I have lost the tag, so I have no idea what variety it is. But I am calling for advice on how to prepare it for winter, you know, cutting back, covering, those sorts of things.
Cindy? Right. Yeah. Do you know if it was a hybrid tea rose or was it a kind of a hardy landscape rose?
Oh, boy. I do not know. As I say, I thought I had saved the card, mm-hmm. but now I can't locate it.
Right. So, you know, so the safest thing to do is to treat it like a hybrid tea rose, which is marginally hardy in Iowa and does require some overwintering protection. Some of the other kind of hardy landscape roses really don't need this protection. They're hardy enough and they will survive and overwinter without the additional effort.
I suspect it's not a landscape rose.
Okay. So if it is a hybrid tea rose, what we're really trying to protect over the winter is that graft union or the base of the plant. So that graft union is probably planted a couple of inches below the surface of the soil. And then I'm going to tell you that after in November or after Thanksgiving, when all the leaves are gone off of this, to mound up another foot of compost or soil around the base to kind of make that graft union and those stems that are coming out of the ground super insulated in some sort of soil. And then you can actually mound up another foot or so of leaves and other things on top of that as then another extra blanket on top of that mound of soil or compost. And those two things together, even if you have to kind of fence it off so that you prevent everything from blowing, are probably going to provide the best protection that you're going to get over the winter. stay away from the rose cones because they have a tendency to fly off or get too hot, actually in the spring, and there's no ventilation with those. So this soil and this straw or leaves on top will freeze and then act like a really nice blanket to help protect the base of the plant. I wouldn't cut anything back this time of year either. I'd wait until spring because, you know, you don't know how far down it might die. What's in the soil and the leaves will probably survive, but some winters are not so bad, and we might even have some of the upper stems that only the upper stems are kind of nipped back by the cold, and those middle stems that were exposed still managed to make it. So you can do that pruning in early springs when you see, when you remove all of this and you see what is actually coming back.
All right, Barbara, thank you so much for your call. And let's do a compost question here for you, Kathleen. Julia's on the line from Union County. Hello, Julia.
Hi.
Hi, can what's you your question?
Me? Yep. We have a compost pile that we put most of our, well, we put all of our grass clippings in from the lawn. And then we also dump chicken droppings in there from the chicken coop, and then also rabbit from the rabbit pen, which is pine shavings and rabbit poop. And so the mix, oh, I'd say 70% grass clippings or so, and then the rest, 30% the chicken and the straw and the chicken poop. And so I'm just wondering about the mix of that. Do I need to mend any, since I'm worried about the pine shavings in the garden and how much that's going to change the pH or whatever. So,
yeah, I do not add pine shavings to my compost pile. I am just leery of it becoming too acidic. I know a little bit won't hurt as long as it's a small minority of your pile, but everything else sounds fantastic that you're putting in there. And definitely just a little caveat put out there that you're putting in grass clippings that have not had herbicide applications on them, because some research at Washington State showed that, okay, cool, because that can definitely last through the composting process, which is really unfortunate.
Absolutely.
So that sounds like you got a great combination. Make sure you're turning it, aerating it will really help bring in those microorganisms to help break it down. We actually turn ours for a year before we would apply it to the garden, just to make sure everything's broken down, because anything that's not broken down, it's going to make the microbes work harder on that as opposed to helping bring more nutrition to your crops, to your vegetables. So make sure it's well decayed and has a good smell to it and not any high in ammonia. Usually that's the first smell that you'll smell that can tell you it's slightly off. So if it smells good and it's totally broken down, it's ready to apply.
We're going to apply it before it snowed and then just leave it all winter. But we'll figure it out.
Thank you. Well, I mean, you could definitely do that. I just always don't like applying things in the winter because it can lead to runoff on frozen soils. We don't apply our compost until spring. We wait till the soils are warm, at least 50 degrees, and that'll lead to faster mineralization and utilization by your plants as opposed to worrying about it running off. Now, in a garden, it's not as much a concern, I realize, but this is a general practice for large-scale compost application.
All right, Julia, thanks so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Justin is on the line next in Cedar Falls. Hi, Justin.
Hi. I've got a small silver maple that the kids, when we were kayaking earlier this year in the spring on the floodplain, we found a silver maple shooting up, and we thought, oh, let's take it home and see what happens. So it's in a pot right now, probably 1 foot around, and it's growing really well. It's probably about 1.5 to 2 feet tall. Just wondering what to do with it for the winter. Do we need to get it in the ground?
Cindy?
You can plant that now if you have a place that you want to plant it. Now's a good time to plant it. Make sure you water it well. And you may have to water it a couple of times this fall and into winter until the ground freezes. And then you obviously should protect it from deer damage or rabbit damage over the winter because it's still pretty small. You could also wait if you don't have the right spot picked out yet. And then I would tell you to bury the pot, the plant in the pot somewhere in the landscape and kind of just nurse it over for the winter. Add some straw on top and wait to plant it next spring. So it would still remain outside. It's hardy enough to take it. We just want to protect that root system. So you have options.
Okay. And one of those tree tubes, is that something you just purchase, like a protective tree tube? Is there anything to know there?
Yeah, so if you want to use a tree tube, you just make sure you cut it to size so that it's not kind of rubbing up against any of the branches. Those will work well for this winter. It shouldn't remain on the plant forever, so it's something you're going to take off in the spring. But you could also just use some kind of fencing, some small mesh kind of fencing as well, if you have that access to that and not need, I guess, to purchase a tree tube. You just don't want any rabbit or deer kind of nibbling on your really young tree when they're hungry this winter.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call,
Thank
Justin.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Next up, let's go to Gerald in Waterloo. Hi, Gerald. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I've been collecting seed heads and cone flowers, asters, black-eyed Susan out of my wildlife prairie grass area, and I want to seed them in the dike alongside of my pond, kind of steep, it's all grass. When would be the best time to seed them, spring or the fall? I've got a couple 5-gallon buckets of them that I've laid out and dried out.
Cindy?
Yeah, sounds great. And Kathleen can help on this one as well. But yeah, I would suggest that you kind of make a bed in the area that you want to plant them, and you actually put them out this fall. Some seed do need kind of a winter period. Even some perennial seed do need a winter period. So if you can just kind of sow that seed this fall and then mulch on top of it, so that it hopefully doesn't wash away or doesn't get eaten by animals. And then Mother Nature kind of takes...
It's just all tall grass right now, so I'm just going to kind of throw it out into the grass. So.
Okay. Yeah, I might create some strips in there that, you know, you can get that good seed-to-soil contact so that it will kind of germinate and come up in between the grass. And then I might tell you to save a little bit of the seed until spring. Just put it in your garage. And then, you can resow some more
Both
in
times.
The spring. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Kathleen, did you have anything?
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kathleen, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Excellent recommendation, Cindy. I second every one of them.
All right. Let's go to Kevin in Dubuque. Hi, Kevin.
Are you there?
Yep. What's your question?
Thanks so much. Well, due to family illnesses, friends and family in the last year, I really had to let my 15 boxes of organic garden kind of go, sadly. And so it's been really taking on tall weeds, and I want to resurrect it all. I'm wondering, I've been told to cut the tops off and all those weeds and try to compost it all and then extricate, the roots of these weeds in the boxes. And I'm just kind of wondering what their thought is in terms of maybe right now what I should be doing to get ready for spring, since I hopefully should be able to regarden next spring. So just what should I, how would I proceed on something that's really overgrown the past year?
Yeah, Kathleen?
Mm-hmm. Right. I feel your pain. My garden is a quasi-disaster too. And last year was particularly hard, and my condolences too if you've had any tragedies, which a lot of people have had. And watching your garden go down is just, I think, emblematic of that. Definitely cut off the seed heads. I highly recommend that, because those seeds can last forever if they get in the ground. And weeds aren't bad. They're roots in place, so hold your soil during the winter. So I would not worry about doing anything to it right now. You can mulch if there's spare spots. Definitely put some straw and mulch out there to cover them up. We always mulch our strawberry patch, for example, in our garden. Give it a heavy 6-inch layer of mulch. So if there's anything growing, I would put mulch on it for the winter. But the rest of it, just
cut the seed heads off and compost them. Yes, you want to kill those weed seeds. Mix them with some, hopefully you got some good manure around from your farm or somebody's farm, and then start anew in the spring. I mean, you could theoretically go in and pull everything out and plant a cover crop of rye for the winter. Rye will really help clean up a garden space, but if it's going to be a lot of work, I would not put yourself through that agony. I would just make sure you don't have weed seed heads or weed seeds out there that'll germinate next year.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot for your call. Here's an interesting question from Eldon in Des Moines. He said, a monster puffball mushroom popped up in a path through our wooded backyard. 5 days ago, it showed up as a small white sphere that looked like a ping pong ball in the path. Now it is a great luminous white sphere as big as a basketball. The first thing our Facebook friends asked is if it's edible, but I might have something else in mind for it. Is this a good species for inoculating our compost? If so, how long can we keep the spores? Kathleen, is that something that you know about? I haven't heard about inoculating a compost with a mushroom.
There are commercial preparations of fungi that you can inoculate compost piles with. I would not just take a puffball and put it in there. So I'll pass it to Cindy to talk about how to get your mushroom ID'd. We do have experts on campus. Lena, for example, in the Plant Path Lab could do it for you. First thing first, identify what you have out there. Pass
Cindy?
It to Cindy.
Yeah, but I would agree that let's make sure first, you're not going to eat it, or he doesn't plan on eating it, I don't think. But there is an edible mushroom foraging guide that does. Lena Rodriguez Salamanca actually put this together and did a wonderful job. So you can get that through ISU Extension and your Extension County office. You can also send it or a picture of it to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. Puffballs are a little easier to identify than some other types of mushrooms, and some people do eat them. I have absolutely no idea if this is going to be what you want to inoculate your compost. And a plant pathologist, like someone from the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic, might do a better job of answering that question.
So, all right. Sorry. Yeah. Thanks, Eldon. He also added this PS, which is really funny. He says, when I was a kid, my grandfather hunted edible puffball mushrooms in the backwoods of New Hampshire. I have memories of a monster sized one that nearly covered the tailgate of his 62 Plymouth station wagon.
Wow.
Yeah, that must have been incredible. All right. Yeah. Here's one for you, Kathleen, from Judy. I have planted daikon radishes, 80% peas and about 10% oats as a cover crop in my raised bed gardens. I hope to cut it down next spring. If I leave it as mulch and don't till the soil, will it be more difficult to establish vegetables with small seeds like carrots or other root vegetables like potatoes?
Well, thanks, Judy. That's a great thing to prick my brain about daikon, because I didn't mention that. Daikon radish is a great cover crop. It helps break up hard pans and definitely helps prevent soil erosion over the winter, and a lot of farmers do end up feeding that crop too to their livestock, or let their livestock graze on it. You can leave it. It should degrade on its own. However, I would definitely test it in the spring before you plant anything. Make sure, just like that compost answer, it's well decomposed underneath there. Because any daikon residue that's there, it's going to interfere with germination of your carrot seeds, for example. So it should work, but give it a test.
All right. Well, Kathleen, we are out of time, but thank you so much for being here today.
Welcome. Thank you, Charity.
Kathleen Dellett, she is Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist. The 2021 Iowa Organic Conference is coming up in Iowa City on Sunday, November 28th and Monday, November 29th. You can find more information and register online. Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Charity.
Cindy Haynes, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. We'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.